It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, in Virginia, repetitive, gradual, or cumulative injuries are not covered by workers' comp. So what that means is that if you are moving boxes all day long and at the end of the day your back is killing you and you go to the doctor and you've blown out a disc in your back, that is actually not covered by workers' comp in Virginia. Virginia is one of the states that does not provide coverage for that. On the other hand, if you lift a box or a refrigerator, something specific and identifiable, and you feel a pop or a pain or a pull in your back, that is covered by workers' comp. So it's a very important distinction because Virginia does not cover repetitive injuries.
Private attorney Jamie Carrick at Jeff McDonald & Associates talks about the weird world of workers' compensation, where you could get workers' compensation if you hurt your back at work moving one refrigerator, but probably not if you were moving two refrigerators, and what your former employer may and may not say about you in a job reference is disclosed during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 159, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Consumers for Auto Reliability and Safety, or CARS, and its many allies in the rental car safety battle have linked up with Change.org, which is the largest online platform for social change in the U.S. Within a matter of days, more than 150,000 people signed petitions to spur Enterprise Rent-A-Car into ceasing its practice of renting vehicles that are under a safety recall to hapless, unsuspecting rental car customers. In one particularly horrific case, two sisters ages 20 and 24, who were led to believe they were getting an upgrade, were killed in such a car under a safety recall. Currently, manufacturers and new car dealers are prohibited from selling new cars that are under safety recalls. The petition drive simply asks that rental car companies, such as Enterprise, be held to this same common sense safety standard. Polling results show that 86% of people think those practices should be outlawed. Hertz recently reached an agreement with CARS to support federal legislation to prohibit ticking time bomb rental cars. Enterprise is feeling the heat, but so far has refused to do the right thing. At some point, they will cave. Just a question of when. For more information, go to www.carconsumers.org or www.change.org. In other news, in 2010, there were 9.8 million extremely low-income renter households in the U.S. and only 3 million rental homes affordable and available to these households. This shortage of 6.8 million rental units means that only 30 rental homes are affordable and available for every 100 extremely low-income renters. These are among the findings of an analysis released last month by a national housing research and advocacy group. Housing Spotlight, The Shrinking Supply of Affordable Housing, was produced by the National Low-Income Housing Coalition and compares the number of low-income, very low-income, and extremely low-income renter households in each state with the number of rental homes that renters below each income threshold can afford. There are millions of families in the U.S. whose incomes are so low and whose housing costs are so high that all it would take is a few days out of work with a sick child or one high heating bill to push them into homelessness, said Sheila Crowley, president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. This is the forgotten housing crisis, overshadowed by the emphasis upon foreclosed upon or underwater homeowners. The full report is available on the National Low Income Housing Coalition website at www.nlihc.org. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Brady v. Human Resource Institute of Norfolk. Alva S. Brady, a registered nurse, was discharged in September 1980 because she ordered her own prescription at her employer's pharmacy for thyroid tablets, a controlled drug she had been taking since 1964. Her employer said she had no authority to prescribe drugs for herself and violated professional ethics. Miss Brady said she was on a continuing prescription and her doctor did not have to write out a new prescription each time she needed more of the thyroid drug. The Virginia Employment Commission found no misconduct and awarded unemployment compensation. The Circuit Court reversed, but the Supreme Court of Virginia found in her favor. The Supreme Court found that ordering her own prescription was extremely poor judgment, but not a deliberate violation of a work rule or a willful disregard of her duties to her employer. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault. And Brady v. Human Resource Institute of Norfolk is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
This is Jane from Richmond.
Welcome to the show, Joan. What question do we have this week?
My daughter was let go from a job, and she had another job offer. The doctor called the previous employer, and the previous employer stated that she had been fired and that she was not a good fit. I would like to know, are they legally allowed to do that?
Well, Joan, that's a good question, and there's a specific Virginia statute that covers exactly that situation, and it's called Code of Virginia 40.1-27, and it says as follows: no person doing business in Virginia having discharged an employee from the service shall, and these are the key words, willfully and maliciously prevent or attempt to prevent by word or writing, directly or indirectly, such discharged employee from obtaining employment with any other person. And then it goes on and it says, but this section shall not be construed as prohibiting any person from giving, on application for any other person, a truthful statement of the reason for such discharge. Now, to translate all of that legalese into plain English, a prospective employer can ask a former employer for information about how the employee did on the job and why the employee is no longer there. And the employer can give a truthful statement. What the former employer can't do is, as the statute says, willfully and maliciously prevent you from obtaining another job. In other words, they can't lie about you. They can't be untruthful about you. But they can be truthful. Now, of course, in that situation, what's considered truthful, what's considered untruthful, is probably a matter of interpretation. what I always advise people to do in situations like that is when you make an application for a job and you think there might be a problem if they contact your former employer, is to just be upfront about that and to say why you separated, what your side of it is. Let the prospective employer hear your side first rather than hearing it from the former employer. Now, if the former employer deliberately lies, you might be able to sue the former employer for money damages, but that would be a very difficult case. Does that give you the information that you were hoping to get?
Yes, sir, it does, and thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for being on the show. We're here at the law offices of Jeff McDonald and Associates on West Broad Street, and we are speaking with an associate, Jamie Carrick, and we're going to be speaking about the weird world of workers' compensation. Welcome to the show, Jamie.
Thanks, Marty.
Well, Jamie, would you tell our listening audience, first of all, in general terms, what is workers' compensation?
Well, generally speaking, workers' compensation is something that an injured worker is going to get paid for sustaining an injury on the job. Workers' comp is a very limited remedy. It's going to pay for lost wages, and it's going to pay for medical treatment. And that's more or less it.
Now, you said an injury on the job, and I gather there are two general rules: that the injury has to arise out of employment and has to be in the course of employment. Would you tell us, in general terms, what do those two requirements mean?
I'll start with the easier one, and that is in the course of. So your injury has to happen in the course of your employment, and what that means is that you have to be working at the time. So obviously, if you're at home, you're not going to get workers' compensation. There's some trickier situations when you're coming to and from work, but generally speaking, it has to occur while you're working. Now, arising out of your employment is a much trickier concept. It's not enough that your accident just happened on the job. It has to be related to your employment. And so there is a whole series of rules and laws and case law that tell us whether or not an injury that happened on the job is actually arising out of your employment.
So you would think that the mere fact that an injury occurred at your place of employment and at a time when you were working and was basically part of your work would be enough, but apparently that's not the case. And we're going to go through what I call the weird world of workers' compensation and some of the unusual rules that have arisen. And the first one I was hoping you would talk about would be what I call the one fridge, two fridge rule, which otherwise is the identifiable incident rule. What's that all about?
Well, in Virginia, repetitive, gradual, or cumulative injuries are not covered by workers' comp. So what that means is that if you are moving boxes all day long and at the end of the day your back is killing you and you go to the doctor and you've blown out a disc in your back, that is actually not covered by workers' comp in Virginia. Virginia is one of the states that does not provide coverage for that. On the other hand, if you lift a box or a refrigerator, something specific and identifiable, and you feel a pop or a pain or a pull in your back, that is covered by workers' comp. So it's a very important distinction because Virginia does not cover repetitive injuries.
And another important distinction is what I call the why did you do that rule, what I call the actual risk test as opposed to the positional risk test. Would you tell us what these tests are and which test Virginia uses?
Virginia applies the actual risk rule, and what that means is that, again, your injury has to be related to your job. And a good example of that is, for example, a convenience store manager or somebody who works at a convenience store. Sometimes they'll get held up at gunpoint, and that is covered by workers' comp if you're working at a convenience store. Whereas me working at a law firm, if we were to get held up, that would not be covered by workers' compensation because it's not an actual risk of the employment. So again, it's not enough that it happened on the job. It has to be something that arises out of and is related to your employment.
And I gather something that would be more likely to happen at work, like the convenience store robbery as opposed to the law firm robbery.
Right, exactly.
Now, another thing that can happen anywhere is a slip and fall, and that leads to a couple of rules that I've come up with, the measure your steps rule, like you fall on the steps. Apparently, it's not enough that you fell on the steps.
That's right. Just a simple fall or a slip on steps is not enough to get coverage under workers' compensation. There has to be something special about it to get coverage under workers' comp. So one instance where you might get workers' comp coverage would be if there's something abnormal or unusual or unique about those steps. So maybe the steps are unusually high. Maybe the steps have a defect in them. Maybe there is something that you slip on or something that you trip on those steps. Maybe there is something wrong with the hand railing. There just needs to be some specific reason why you fell or why you slipped.
And that leads to the other rule, which I call the slippery when what rule. Apparently, if you just slip and fall at work on a flat surface, not on the stairs, but just on the floor, again, that's not enough. You have to do more than just demonstrate that you slipped and fell?
That's right. And that's really surprising to a lot of people because you think, well, I slipped on the stairs. Workers' comp should cover that, but it's not true. You need to show what you slipped on. So you slipped on some water, you slipped on a piece of ice, you slipped on some grease. You need to be able to identify what caused your slip in order to prove that your accident was work-related.
And that leads to another weird rule of workers' compensation I call the why did the worker cross the road rule. And I gather here that if, let's say you've got a construction worker and he crosses the road to get a soda pop in the middle of his shift and he gets hit by a car, that could be considered compensable. But if that same worker is on a lunch break and crosses the road to get lunch and is hit by a car, that might not be compensable. It's something called the personal comfort rule. Could you tell us what that means?
And one extension of the personal comfort rule involves people who are working out of town. And that will provide coverage to a lot more instances that would not normally be covered under workers' comp. So, for example, if that construction worker is working out of town and he's staying in a hotel and he goes out to lunch, that would be covered by workers' compensation. And that's called the personal comfort rule.
I guess that means that the employer has to give an accommodation for the personal comfort of the worker, whether it's meals or lodging, if that is somehow related to their working.
That's right.
Well, now, what if the worker is doing something that is during the work day, but is their own personal business and they get injured? Is that going to be covered?
That would fall under the personal mission rule. So, for example, if I were to leave right now to go to the bank to deposit my paycheck and I slipped and fall on a sidewalk 2 blocks from the office, I would not get workers' comp for that because I was on my own personal mission.
Now, what if you were taking your boss's paycheck to the bank to deposit it? That would, I guess, bring into play the, but I did it for my boss rule, the special errand rule, and how's that going to affect your claim?
Exactly. I would then get workers' compensation benefits for that. It becomes work-related because I'm doing a special errand for my boss.
Now, I gather that if you're going to and from work, that's generally not going to be covered by workers' compensation, but there are apparently some well-recognized exceptions to that, and I guess the first one is, I call it the boss pays for my ride rule. What happens in that situation if the transportation is either provided by the employer or perhaps paid for by the employer?
Sure. So if my boss, for example, sends out a car to come pick me up in the morning and take me home at night, if I'm involved in an accident, a car accident during that, then workers' compensation would cover it.
And the next exception is what I call the ain't but one way in and out rule. And that's a situation where there's one and only one means to get in and out of the place of employment. What happens in that situation if there's an injury there?
Then you do get workers' compensation for that.
And can you give us an example of that?
Typically, that comes into play in a parking lot situation. So there's a fender bender in a parking lot, and there's only one way to get in and out, then workers' compensation would cover that.
Now, you mentioned parking lots. Are those generally going to be covered by workers' compensation? Are they not going to be covered? Does it depend on the facts and circumstances of the particular case? In other words, what is the workplace consist of? What are the premises of the workplace?
Well, it's a little bit fact-specific, but in general, parking lot accidents are going to be covered. That's definitely true if the parking lot is owned by the employer. Then that, because they exclusively own those premises, if you're injured in the parking lot, workers' comp will cover that. It may not if, for example, you work at a mall and it's not exclusively owned by your employer, then you might not get workers' comp for that.
So it could depend on something as arbitrary as whether the parking lot is totally under the control of your employer or is under the control of a whole bunch of employers?
Right.
Now, one of the things that sometimes happens at work is employees will be fooling around, horseplay, and this leads to the I wasn't playing around rule. What is the situation if you are injured on the job through the horseplay of a fellow worker?
This is actually something that's been addressed pretty recently by the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. The rule's gone back and forth, but the way that the law stands right now, if you are what we call the innocent victim of horseplay, then you get workers' compensation coverage for that. The case that went up to the Supreme Court was an individual who was working at a restaurant and his coworkers were throwing pieces of ice at him, just jokingly. He put up his arm to protect himself. When he did that, he dislocated his shoulder. And it went up on appeal, and finally he was ultimately awarded benefits. The theory being that when you get a bunch of people in a work environment together, you've got to expect some amount of joking around and horseplay. It's just part of work.
And then the last rule that I wanted to talk about, and this is kind of a very tragic one, but I call it the better off dead rule, the unexplained accident rule. And apparently this is so weird that you can have a situation where, at least in terms of your workers' compensation claim, you're better off dead rather than alive in an unexplained accident. How does that work?
Well, first I need to explain the concept of an unexplained accident. In order to get coverage under Virginia workers' comp, you need to be able to identify and articulate what happened. If you can't, then that's called an unexplained accident, and you don't get workers' comp coverage for that. In conjunction with that is what's called the death presumption. So if you are found deceased on the job, then your death is presumed to arise out of your employment. And then the employer has to rebut and put forth some evidence that it was not related to your job. So that's another way of saying the better off dead rule, if you get that death presumption. The unfortunate cases are where people sustain a head injury or they're unconscious or they have a brain injury and they're not able to remember or to articulate how the accident happened, or maybe they're in a coma for an extended period of time. And those people are unable to explain how their accident happened. And so sadly, in those cases, they would be denied benefits because they can't explain what happened if there weren't any witnesses. And so in that case, they would have a better shot at getting the injury covered if they had actually passed away in the accident, which is really unfortunate.
Well, that certainly is one of the weirdest legal rules that I've ever heard. And it certainly explains why, if you are injured on the job, you really do need an expert to assist you. And I thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. We have been speaking with Jamie Carrick. She is an associate at the law firm of Jeff McDonald and Associates on West Broad Street, and we have been talking about the weird world of workers' compensation. Thank you very much for being on the show, Jamie.
Thanks for having me.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 49, which deals with oaths and affirmations and bonds. Code of Virginia 49-10 authorized the use of the Bible in administering an oath, but has an unusual prohibition. Under the code, no officer of this Commonwealth or any political subdivision thereof shall, in administering an oath in pursuance of law, require or request any person taking the oath to kiss the Holy Bible or any book or books thereof. But persons being sworn for any purpose may be required to place their hand on the Holy Bible. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. At least 21 whistleblower statutes protect employees who report unsafe or unhealthy working conditions. Join us next week when private attorney and friend of the show, Harris Butler, speaks about the rights of workers to blow the whistle on wrongful employer conduct. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.